Morning. Today's daf in Menachos is Chaf. We are on Yutes Amud Beis, and we are a little bit about around halfway down the Amud, and we're talking about essential avodas. So the reason we got onto the topic of essential avodas are two categories of avodas: those that are essential and those that are not essential. Those that are not essential obviously still remain a mitzvah, and there's a requirement to do the avodas. But if you don't do them, so the avoda still counts; it's still considered an avoda. Obviously, the essential avodas, by definition, are essential. And so therefore, failure to comply with the essential avodas means that the avoda is not done. The Mishnah back in Yechez Amad Aleph gave us a list of those things regarding menachos that are not essential. Yitzika, Belila, Pesisa, Malicha, Hanafa, Hagasha. And then the Mishnah also includes breaking it up into either big pieces or too many pieces, one or the other, pshatim. But the Mishnah mentions those things which are considered non-essential avodas. So yitzika is the pouring of the oil. Now, as we already pointed out, you have to pour in a full log of shemen of your chaser if it's missing any of the shemen, so it's not good. So yitzika over here means the yitzika achrona. It's the final pouring of the oil. It's pouring over the top. Belila is the mixing we already discussed back in the Gemara. You don't actually have to mix it, but there has to be enough of a mixture of oil and flour where, in theory, it could mix. Called roi labila. And we already pointed out that even though yitzik and belila, we just said, are not exactly the same shop, but that's okay. They meet the high kadisa va kadisa. And then the Gemara talks.
If I do it,
if
I can understand
this. Obviously, you should be bolo, but if you don't do belila, so then it's okay. In other words, the mincha still works. Okay, that's what we learned. And then pesisa, and then the breaking it up, meaning if you don't break up the mincha, again, it's still a mincha, and it still works. And melach, and salt. And as you'll see over the course of today's daf is really dedicated to the topic of salting. We saw together in our Mishnah that salting is not an essential part of a mincha. How do we know if it's essential or if it's not? So a number of positions that were stated. So Rav in yesterday's daf in Yotes Amud Aleph says that kol makom shenemar tor v'chuka eino ela la'akev. So you got to look for two words when the Torah mentions an avoda. So you got to scout out for the word Torah and the word chuka. And if you see those two words, so you know that it's ma'akev. And if you don't see those two words, so then it's not ma'akev. We tweaked and distilled his shita. It doesn't really mean, the Gemara, after a little bit of discussion, the Gemara, it doesn't really mean that you need to see the words Torah v'chuka. Truth of the matter is that distilled, you really need to see the word chok. Right? Some version of the word chok, if you see that, so then it's essential. Torah requires chok, but chok doesn't require Torah. The Gemara says that towards the bottom of Yotes Amud Aleph. Then the Gemara points out that by a mincha, so what exactly is going to define what is essential by a mincha or what is not essential by a mincha? So if you take a look at the top of Yotes Amud Beis, Amarav kol makom shehichzel akasa b'Torah mincha eino ela la'akev. If you see repetition regarding a mincha, so then the purpose, of course, is li'ikuva. Repetition obviously means that the Torah is saying, now we're being, in other words, the first time we were serious, second time now we're really serious. So that doesn't translate well in English. But in other words, li'ikuva. In other words, it's essential. That's the reason why the Torah repeats it for a second time. And that is what we have so far on the daf, by other menachos, sorry, by other karbanos. So the word chok, by mincha, even though, right, again, I'm just simplifying yesterday's daf, even though the Torah does say the word chok by mincha, but still, by mincha, what defines and what determines essentiality is repetition. If the Torah repeats it, it's essential. Good. That's where we got to yesterday, and we are in the middle of the Testament base, picking it up where we left off yesterday. I'm a Rav Kahana. V'ravasi l'rav, v'harei hagasha. So the Gemara says, well, let's now test your theory. So we know that when it comes to a mincha, there's a mitzvah of hagasha. The mitzvah of hagasha, not to be confused with halacha. And I think at one point I was. But not to be confused with hagasha, with halacha. Halacha is one of the four avodas that's done with the komets, right? The kemitza, then the kiddush komets, then halacha, and then haktaras komets. But that's all vis-a-vis the komets. When we're talking about the mitzvah of hagasha is done with the entire mincha, pre-kemitza. And what Hagasha is simply is a presentation of the mincha towards the Mizbeach. As will we be learning in just a couple minutes from now, you have to make contact with it and the southwest portion of the Mizbeach. This is the mitzvah of Hagasha. Now, v'harei gasha detana beikra v'lo ma'akva. Now, 2 points. One, there's repetition by Hagasha. Two, it's not Ma'akev. And obviously, this poses a difficulty for Rav. How can it be that there's repetition, but it's not Ma'akev? So, Mantana Be'i Dechsiv. Zostar Asa Mincha Akrev Osa B'nei Aaron Lifnei Hashem. So, and then the Gemara quotes the Pasuk. They're already now the second Pasuk that speaks to the idea of Hagasha. So you see already now that there are two Pasukim that relate to Hagasha, and meanwhile, it's not Ma'akev, and this is difficult for Rav. So the Gemara says it's not difficult for Rav. Ha'ulik v'olam makam huda'asa. No. The second Pasuk over there is not talking about the need for the essential need of Hagasha. It's a mitzvah, and you should do it, but it's not essential. Second Pasuk is telling me location. Where in the Mizbeach do we do Hagasha? Detanya, and here is the Brisa. Lifnei Hashem Yachol B'Ma'arav. So Lifnei Hashem would indicate west. Why would it indicate west? Because again, once you have a general orientation of the Azara, so you know that the west side of the Mizbeach is facing the Eichel. So when the Torah says Lifnei Hashem, it's west side of the Mizbeach. So I would think that Hagasha should be done the west side of the Mizbeach. Tamalomer El Panei Mizbeach. But then the Torah also says that it has to be the face of the Mizbeach. What's the face of the Mizbeach? That's the access point of the Mizbeach. Access point of the Mizbeach, that's the south side of the Mizbeach, where the ramp is. So, E al Panei Mizbeach Yachol B'Darim. So therefore, I would have thought south. Tamalomer Lifnei Hashem. So then the Torah swings back to Lifnei Hashem. So, HaKetzad. So we're obviously confused. Is it south or is it west? So, Megisha B'Keren Dromis Marav is Keneged Chudo Shal Keren V'Dio. So the Gemara says exactly, meaning the answer is yes. It's the south and it's the west. So in other words, where do you hit? You hit the southwest corner, and that is where the Hagasha is done. Hitting, in other words, you're literally taking the bowl with the mincha in it, and you're making contact with the bowl to the southwest corner, and literally the edge of the southwest corner of the Mizbeach. That is the Tanakhama's opinion. And so therefore, truth of the matter is, we're good, meaning We've seen enough in the Braisa, we're obviously going to continue, but we've seen enough in the Braisa, now we know the point that the second Pasuk, in reference to Hagasha, is not there to speak about essential, it's there to just simply talk about location. Now, we're in the Braisa, we're going to finish the Braisa. The Braisa also brings in another opinion. Rabbi Eliezer, Omer Yachol Yigishen Lama Rav Shel Keren, L'drom Shel Keren, I might have thought we should bring it to the west, or maybe to the south, meaning just, like we already indicated. Psukim indicate two sides, south, west. South or west. Amart kol makom shatamosi shtei mikros. And then Rabbi Elazar says, but look, we have two pesukim over here. Echem mekayim atzma mekayim chavero. If I follow one pasuk, not only do I satisfy this pasuk, but I satisfy the other pasuk. I know all this is going to sound strange as I read it. It will be clarified in just a moment. Echem mekayim atzma vatos chavero. If I read one pasuk, it satisfies this pasuk, but it negates the other pasuk. Minich neshem mekayim atzma vato chavero, v'tofse neshem mekayim atzma mekayim chavero. So if I have two psukim, I'm going to favor the pasuk that not only satisfies itself, but its friend, and I'm not going to favor the pasuk that satisfies itself, but negates its friend. Again, I know all this is right now vague. Clarification coming in just a moment. When you try to go to the west side, which is Lifnei Hashem, yeah, but at the same time, however, you're not going to be hitting Pnei HaMizbech, which is the south side. However, if I do Hagasha to the south side, Kiyamta Lifnei Hashem. So we not only have hit the south side, but we successfully also hit Lifnei Hashem as well. This is the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, which simple pshat Rabbi Eliezer, where is Hagasha done? To the south side. Because when you go to the south, you are both being Mekayim, the Pasuk of Pnei HaMizbech, and the Pasuk of Lifnei Hashem. Now the Gemara says, what just happened here? How can, by hitting the south side, it's a riddle, how can by hitting the south side, you're hitting not only the Pasuk of Pnei HaMizbech, which it is, but you're also hitting Lifnei Hashem? Right? How could that be? Gemara asks that question, Gemara gives an answer. And so the Gemara says over here what we already heard in Zvachim numerous times, and that is that the Mizbech is a moving target. It is not, there is not a consensus viewpoint in terms of where exactly the Mizbech is situated in the Azara. We know, of course, that it is to the east of the Heichal, but where exactly is it on the north-south plane is subject to a machlokus amongst the Tanaim. Rabbi Eliezer is of the opinion, Rabbi Eliezer of this Braisa, is of the opinion that the entire Mizbeach is north of the Mason-Dixon line. So if we were to draw a horizontal line dividing north and south of the Azara, according to Rabbi Eliezer, it's totally in the north. which now means that as you exit the Heichal, you are now facing actually the south side of the Mizbeach. And so this brings us to Rabbi Eliezer's point, where if you then do Hagasha to the south side, you not only got Penei HaMizbeach, but you also got Lifnei Hashem. But all this is predicated on the fact that he's of the opinion that the Mizbeach is Kula B'Tzafon, it's all in the north. We are on the bottom of Yetzes Amid Beis, Maskif La Rav Huna. So we have now dealt with Hagasha. Even though there's repetition by Hagasha, it's not essential. The second pasuk is there to teach us about location. What next is melach, salting. So the Gemara says, Maskev, l'ravuna re melach delo tanabekra ume'akva. So here by salt, it now takes us in the other direction. There's no repetition by instruction of salting the mincha, and yet we know salting is essential. Now it's funny that the Gemara says that salting is essential, because if you go back to the Mishnah gave us a list of things that are not essential, and one of the things mentioned in the Mishnah is melach. So keep that in mind, meaning our Mishnah clearly holds that it's not essential. But right now, right, follow the Gemara here, where the Gemara now is going to be arguing that it is essential. So the Gemara over here quotes the following brisa: Bris melach olam hu shetehe bris amur bemelach divrei Rav Yehuda. The pasuk in Korach says that it is a bris melach olam hu, for an everlasting covenant of salt. Okay, and so the shetehe bris amur bemelach. In other words, that the bris is in conjunction with the salt. Divrei Rav Yehuda. And Rabbi Shimon Omer, Nemar kan bris melach olam hu, v'nemar lahalam bris kahunas olam. And it says by Pinchas that it's bris kahunas olam, kishem she'i efshel karbanos below kahuna. You know that we can't have the karbanos without the kohen. The kohen is a necessary component of karbanos. Otherwise, we have nobody doing the avoda. So kach efshel karbanos below melach. Same thing is true regarding salt. Just like kohanim are essential towards avoda, so too is salt essential to avoda. Ad kan divrei habraisa. Now, Rabbi Shimon clearly is of the opinion that salting is essential. How about Rabbi Yehuda of the Braisa? So according to Rashi, Rabbi Yehuda agrees. So, and Rashi says, it's the top Rashi in the Amud, the only differentiation between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon of this Braisa is just mashmaus darshan. In other words, how do we extract it from the Pesukim? But they both agree that salt is essential. So, what do we have right now? A Braisa we just learned together that salt is essential. The problem is that it's only mentioned once regarding a mincha, and the problem is that Rav tells us that regarding a mincha, I need repetition in order to establish that's essential. So the Gemara is the answer, Amar Rav Yosef, Rav Ketani Didan Svirle, Damar Lo Melech Kasher. So the Gemara says, okay, look, you just quoted a Braisa, that's very good. But remember, there's also our Mishnah on Yudches. The Mishnah taught us that salt is not essential. So as far as Rav is concerned, Rav is not bothered. Rav is just simply siding with our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says salt is not essential. Rav says in order for anything by a mincha to be essential, it needs repetition. Salt is not repeated by a mincha, and therefore it's not essential, which is our Mishnah's position. The Braisa argues with our Mishnah, and Rav sides with our Mishnah. So the Gemara says, okay, let's go to Yitzika. Now, by Yitzika, what do we say by Yitzika? So, Yitzika in our Mishnah means what? Means you didn't do Yitzika at all? Obviously not. Meaning you have to do Yitzika, as we already pointed out at the beginning of Shir today. All the oil has to go into the Mincha. What does it mean, lo yatzak? What's the Yitzika of our Mishnah? Ella, lo yatzak kohen, elazar. So it meant, and this is a review of what we already said, that by Yitzika, it just simply meant that a kohen didn't do it. It was done by a non-kohen. Which, according to our Mishnah, is fine. Meaning it should have a Kohen doing it, but a non-Kohen doing it would be fine. So the Hachanami, Lo Melech Kohen Elazar. So why don't we say the same thing regarding Malicha? That when the Mishnah says that you didn't do Malicha, the Mishnah doesn't mean you didn't do Malicha at all. Of course you did Malicha. What the Mishnah means is it was done by non-Kohen. So Amar Lei V'chitala Adalcha Shazar Kar V'Gabe Mizbeach. The Gemara says no. We will not be entertaining such a thought. The idea that a non-Kohen could do Yitzika, that's fine. We can entertain that. Where is Yitzika done? Yitzika is done well before we got to the Mizbeach. So we can have a non-Kohen doing Yitzika. Can we entertain the idea that a non-Kohen is going to be doing Malicha? Where is Malicha done? On the Mizbeach. No non-Kohen is going up to the up on the Mizbeach. Gemara gives a different approach. You know what? We can make the argument that no, that really melicha is essential. Salting is essential. Salting is essential. It's not repeated by a mincha. It goes back to an idea we had yesterday. Certain expressions, certain phrases in the Torah will serve as a substitution for repetition. So, for example, over here, it says the word bris. Bris sounds like, doesn't sound like, it actually means it's a covenant. It's something that is that is ratified. And it serves as a substitution for repetition. It's ki'ilu, it's as if it's the Torah's repeating, salting regarding a mincha. The Gemara says, wait one second. The entire discussion over here worked under the assumption that by salt it only mentions it once by a mincha. Is that true? V'lo tana be'kra v'aksi v'chol karban minchascha b'melach timlach. That's repeated. That's melicha twice. Now, it's a little tricky because it's not the pasuk being repeated. It's just the verb itself being repeated. But okay. So the Gemara says, ha'umi ba'i le'lecha detanya. The Gemara says, no. That pasuk over there is... that pasuk over there is making a totally different point, and that's the following. And so we are now going to learn a braisa together. This braisa is somewhat lengthy. It's going to take us to the middle of the amud, and basically the braisa over here is going to treat us to the following discussion. We know that there is a mitzvah in the Torah to salt karban. Good. We need more details. What's getting salted? The part that's going up onto the mizbeach. All parts that are going up onto the mizbeach. The parts that are being eaten. Meaning, okay, good. So we have this general idea that there's this mitzvah of melach, and now what? Now the details. So the braisa over here is going to highlight which parts of the karbanos require melach and which parts of the karban do not require melach. Ilo nemar karban b'melach shomeani afilo etzim v'dam shenikru karban. If all I had was just simply the instructions of here's what you're going to salt, karban. A lot of things are called karban. Basically, anything that goes up onto the Mizbeach. Blood goes on the Mizbeach. Wood goes on the Mizbeach. Now, wood generally serves as fuel for the fire. So I would have thought those things also require salting as well. Tam lomar, mincha. That's why the Torah highlights mincha. Ma mincha miyuchad she'achrim ba'im chovala, af kol she'achrim ba'im chovala. So the Gemara says, you know what's unique about mincha? And by the way, it will become clear over the course of this discussion that even though we're using the word mincha, we really mean komets, the part of the mincha that goes up onto the mizbeach. So you know what's unique about the kmitza? You can't just simply take the komets of a mincha and put them on the mizbeach. I mean, you could, but you have to burn it on the mizbeach. What does that necessitate? Wood. So basically, anything that necessitates wood is going to require melach. If it doesn't require wood, it goes onto the Mizbeach sans wood, does not require melach. So think about it. It makes perfect sense. Blood, that goes on the Mizbeach, but obviously it's not burnt on the Mizbeach. You sprinkle it onto the Mizbeach. So blood doesn't require salting. And, oddly enough, wood. Wood doesn't require wood. In other words, wood is the fuel. But in other words, wood doesn't necessitate wood to be brought up onto the Mizbeach. So wood also doesn't require melach. And now the Gemara is going to follow through with this thought process. The Gemara says, wait one second. There's also a unique aspect of the mincha. And again, when I say mincha over here, we really mean komets. In that it's a matir. So the Gemara says, okay, so maybe the characteristic in which requires salt is it has to be a matir. You know what else is a matir? Blood. So maybe blood should require melach. So the Braisa says, no, the Torah says al mincha secha, which means mincha to the exclusion of blood. Yachotei mincha kulatuna melech. What about the entire mincha? Like I said earlier, in other words, previously when we said the word mincha, we really meant comets. Now the Gemara is entertaining a hava mina that we should salt the entire mincha. Tamalamar carbon. Carbon to melech vein mincha kulatuna melech. No, carbon. Carbon meaning only the part of the mincha that goes up onto the mizbech. Vein li ala comets. So far, what requires salt? The kmitza. Great. And we already know that blood is excluded. And parenthetically, wood is excluded. What else is included in the mitzvah of melech? So, minan l'rabos es ha-lavona. How about the lavona? The other part of a mincha that goes up onto the mizbeach and burnt on the mizbeach. Mar b'yane es ha-lavona shekein ba'im ma b'kli echad. Well, yeah, sure, lavona. Because the lavona is in the same kli as the mincha. So once we establish that mincha has to be burnt, and again, when we say mincha, we really mean the part of the mincha that's burnt on the mizbeach, well, lavona is also part of the mincha that is burnt on the mizbeach. Lavona also requires salt. It's a little, the lavona, just as a visual, it's a little hard to visualize. Meaning we're salting spices. I mean, that's fine. But that's the, okay, anyway. Minan l'rabos es. Now, how do I know that included in this also are the, and now here comes a list of 12 items that are burnt on top of the mizbeach. Number one, a lavona bab, if they atzma lavona that's brought by itself. Number two, lavona bab bezichin, the lavona that comes as the matir for the lechem apanim. Number three, the kataris. Number four, the minchas kohanim. Mincha of a kohen, which, as we already learned numerous times, is burnt totally on the mizbeach. Number five, minchas kohen mashiach. Kohen gadol offers a daily mincha, which is totally burnt on the mizbeach. Number six, minchas nesachim. That is the mincha that comes in conjunction with the standard carbon. Number seven, imuri chatas. The imurim ab of a carbon chatas. Number eight, imuri asham. Number nine, imuri kachi kadashim. So all, basically, all the imurim that are burnt on the top of the mizbeach. It's just that 7, 8, and 9 are just simply, the Gemara divides it into various types of karbanos. Number 10, Imurim Kachim Kalim. Number 11, Avari Ola, the limbs of a karban ola which are burned on top of the Mizbeach. Number 12, Ola Sa'of, the bird ola which is burned entirely on top of the Mizbeach. Min Ayin Tamalam Ra'kol Karban Chatakriv Melach. So there we have the pasuk that says that over all your karbanos, Takriv Melach. Ad Kandivre Habraisa. Okay, so The entire reason why we brought the Braisa in is just simply to highlight that even though there is a repetition by Melach when it comes to a Mincha, and we said that repetition indicates essentiality, and the Gemara for the beginning of today's shiur entertained the idea, assumed that it only mentions it once, but there really is a second mention, but the Gemara says no, the second mention was there to bring us to this point of this Braisa, which is all the other Karbanos that require Melach. Fine. As long as we quoted the Braisa, the Gemara now will use the opportunity to discuss various points with the, that were brought within the Braisa. Amar Mar. Ein li ala komets, minayin l'rabbas es lavona marban es lavona shekein ba ima b'kli echad. So how do we know that lavona of a mincha also requires salt? So the Braisa's answer to that question was, it's in the same kli as a mincha. The Gemara now is curious about that line of the Braisa. V'ha amart ma mincha miyichedesh achirin ba imchov ala. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Based on the characteristics that were already presented in the Braisa, we know already that Lavona requires salting. Because consider, what did the Braisa teach us? What exactly do you need in order to require salt? A, you go on to the Mizbeach. B, it necessitates wood so that it gets burnt on the Mizbeach. That's true regarding the Komets. That's also true regarding the Lavona. So I already know that Lavona has a salt requirement. And why is the Braisa giving us a secondary reason of, oh, and by the way, the Lavona is part and parcel of the Mincha. I don't need that anymore. So Hachi Kamar. Gemara says, okay, so there must be some sort of step in the Braisa that was not explicitly stated, but we're going to have to read it into the Braisa. And this is what the Braisa meant. Ema karban klal mincha prat. Ah. When we approach this pasuk regarding the mincha and the requirements of salting the mincha, so it could be that carbon is a generality, mincha is a specific, and klal pratim b'klal amasha b'prat. And we know the rule. So when we have a klal and a prat, so the rule is that the example now serves not as an example, but as the only thing that requires salting. Mincha in midech rin alone. So which would mean that the requirement of salting is limited only to mincha. Hada amar. Now, as you read on the pasuk, al kol karban chazor klal. So now we know, as we read the rest of the pasuk, that this is a klal uprado klal. So klal uprado klal yatan dan elakein apram apram mafur shachem baim chava av kol shachem baim chavam la. So now, in our classic presentation of klal uprado klal, so what do we now do? We look at the example mincha, and we look at the characteristic of mincha, and we extract that characteristic. And anything that shares that characteristic is going to have a malicha requirement. Good. That is now what the Braisa doesn't say all this, meaning we just read into the Braisa. But this is really what is motivating the Braisa. So the Gemara says, Achem debaim chovala, my niyu eats him. So Avkol eats him. And now the Gemara just simply says, what is that characteristic about a mincha? That when you put the mincha on the mizbeach, it necessitates wood. I can't just simply put, when I say mincha, everyone understand, I really mean komets. When we put the komets onto the mizbeach, you can't just simply drop it on the top of the mizbeach. you have to burn on the top of the mizbeach. There's a requirement of wood. Now that's the characteristic. Any other carbon that shares that characteristic of demanding wood so that it gets burnt on the top of the mizbeach is going to require melach. Ema, the Gemara says, okay, but in terms of common characteristic, we could look at it differently. Ema, skip the parentheses, lavona. So the Gemara says, could it not be that the focus over here is on the lavona? Vaisi dam deikin asachim. So the Gemara says, and if that's in fact the case, so we should also include the nesachim as well. I'm sorry, vaisi dam deikin asachim. So the and blood should also require salting because blood also has a companion, so to say, that goes up onto the mizbech. What's the companion of blood? So the Gemara right now is assuming that the companion of blood is nesachim. The Gemara says that's not true. Nesachim bahadi imurim hu da'aso. You're looking at the nesachim incorrectly. Nesachim is not a companion to blood. Rather, nesachim is a companion to the imurim. My taima achila vishtia. Because in terms of it's a visualization that the Gemara presents numerous times. Kava yachol. It's ki'ilu as if the mizbeach is consuming. So if we're talking about consumption, when I sit down to a meal, so I eat and I drink. So when you are offering on the top of the mizbeach is eating and drinking. Eating, imurim. Drinking, nesachim. So the Gemara says, so the correct way to look at nesachim is not a companion to blood, but rather as a companion to the imurim. Adarabah, kapara v'simcha. So the Gemara says, okay, but I can make another argument, and that is, blood serves as kapara. Once kapara is over, what do we have? We have simcha, right? If I may, as we're approaching the Yamim Norayim, you have Yom Kippur, and you have Sukkos, Kapara, and Simcha. So maybe the right way to look at it is blood and Nesachim. Blood represents a Kapara. It is Kapara. It doesn't represent. It is Kapara, and Nesachim is Simcha. That's when the Shir is sung in the base of Mikdash. So maybe the Gemara is just simply arguing the other direction. Maybe Nesachim is a companion to blood. And so therefore there is a salting requirement to both. Ella lavona ba'ima b'kli achad. So the Gemara says that's where the Braisa got us to. Where now, I know that was a lot of insert into the Braisa. The Braisa did not mention. But in other words, that's why we entertain the notion that maybe blood should require melach. So the Gemara says no. The reason why lavona requires melach is simply because it's part and parcel of the mincha. So nesachim ain ba'im b'kli achad. Nesachim, however, are not coming in the same kli. As far as wood is concerned, so look, wood is necessary for the comets. Wood is necessary for anything and everything that goes up onto the Mizbeach. So therefore, the really common characteristic that demands salt is going to be the companionship of wood, or better stated, the necessity of wood. Since wood is needed to burn the comets, any other carbon that needs wood in order to be burned in the mizbech is going to require salt. The Ema, the Gemara still is arguing. Ma prat mefurash achem b'im chavala u'ma teres. The Gemara says, well, again, look, we have a cloud of protoklal, and the example is mincha. So now we're looking at the characteristic of mincha, and we're going to extract that characteristic, and anything that shares it is going to have a melech requirement. The Gemara says, okay, but if we're looking at the comets, two things we could say about the comets. One, it necessitates wood. Two, it's a matir. So maybe only those things that share the two characteristics are going to require salt. Things like lavona, which allow the consumption of the lechem upon him. So things like that. And when I say things like that, by the way, there are not many other examples that, again, have to be burnt on the Mizbech and serve as a matir. Meaning blood is not a good example. Blood's not burnt. So burnt on the Mizbech and serve as a matir. So I got comets. I got the Lavona that comes in conjunction with the Lechem upon him. Maybe that's all the Torah means. So the Gemara says, lo, mid itzerich me'al minchasech ve'al me'al dimcha mechlal danach kulo osu b'chad sad. So the Gemara says, no, because when you look at the end of the Braisa says, mincha was mincha, excluding mincha is excluding blood. So in other words, we're basically taking matir off the table. That's no longer a consideration in terms of a common characteristic. So now that we take matir off the table, so now we only have one characteristic left. It's burnt on the top of the mizbeach. Okay. Adkan. So basically, what we have accomplished in the last couple of minutes is that we fleshed out the Braisa. The Braisa is looking at, first of all, the Braisa is really looking at Klal Prat Klal. Again, you read the Braisa, you can reread the Braisa. Braisa doesn't say it. But after going through the Gemara inserts it into Braisa. This is really what's motivating the Braisa. And now that we know it's a Klal Prat Klal, we're wondering now, what is the common characteristic of the Prat? The Prat is a Mincha. And again, Mincha really here meaning comets. It's the comments of a mincha. What's the common characteristic? And so the Gemara in the last number of lines really shaped and refined exactly which characteristic we're looking at in terms of what requires salt. And the conclusion of the Gemara is that it needs to be burnt on the mizbech. It needs wood to be burnt on the mizbech, just like the comments. Amar Mar. Me'am mincha secha v'la me'al dimcha. Ve'ema me'am mincha secha v'la me'al evarecha. So the Gemara says, look, certainly the Torah says, me'al mincha secha, and it serves as a miyut that's exclusionary. Which means to say that something is not going to require salt. So what is that thing that is excluded? So it's blood. The Gemara says, I wonder. We're talking about something that's going to go onto the Mizbech and it's not going to require salt, and we excluded blood, but if as long as we're opening ourselves up to what we can exclude, why not make the argument that it should be Avarim, the limbs of a carbonola? That it would be reasonable to exclude that. Consider, meaning the comets is part of the mincha, but it also serves as a matir, and all the other portions of the mizbeach, the imurim. Well, the imurim are not really a matir, sorry, but in other words, they are part of the carbon that goes up onto the mizbeach. The avarim, the limbs of a carbonola. Obviously, there's a requirement to put them on top of the mizbeach, but it's unique. It's a unique portion of a carbon. By any other carbon, the Evarim don't go up on the Mizbech. So what the Gemara now is entertaining is maybe what we should be excluding is not the blood, but rather the limbs of the Mizbech. So the Gemara says, no. Mistaber Evarim havel l'ribui shekein. And here what the Gemara is going to do is classically look at points of connection. Meaning, here's what we know. The comets require salt. That the Torah says straightforward. And now, something is going to get excluded. So our two options right now are the avarim of a carbonola or the blood of a standard carbon. And so now, which is more similar to kemitza, the avarim or the blood? And what the Gemara will tell us is that there are 6 points of connection between avarim and comets, and there are only 2 points of connection between blood and a comet. And you already know how the Gemara is going to conclude. The game ended 6-2. Generally speaking, you know who the winner is. So anyways, let's go through the 6 and let's go through the 2. Okay, so let's start with the 6. So, Evarim havele l'ribui shekein. Acherim b'im chovala kamosa. Number 1, just like by comets. What does it need on the Mizbech? Wood. So too does Evarim. It's not true by blood. The blood, you don't burn the blood on the Mizbech, you sprinkle onto the Mizbech. You apply to the Mizbech, but you don't burn it. Number 2, Ishim Kamosa, it goes on the fire. So blood is not burnt on the fire. Now 1 and 2, by the way, are very similar points to one another. It's just that point number 1 is that it necessitates wood, which brings us to point number 2, and it's going to be burnt. Okay, so admittedly, 1 and 2 are very similar. Number 3, B'chutz Kamosa. Comets and Evarim are only burnt on the outer Mizbeach. Blood sometimes goes on the outer Mizbeach, and sometimes it's brought into the Heichal. On Yom Kippur, Par Helm Davishal Tzibor, Par Kohen Gadol. Okay, so in other words, another point of connection between comets and Evarim. Number 4, Nosar Kamosa. The comets and the Evarim are subject to Nosar. When it comes to blood, so there is no Nosar prohibition as it relates to blood. Number 5, Tumah Kamosa. The comets and the Evarim are subject to becoming Tamei and an Ister in the Torah if one were to consume them while they are Tamei or while the person's Tamei. By blood, admittedly, we all know that there's an Ister to consume blood, but there is not going to be an Ister if the blood becomes Tamei to eat the blood of a carbon which becomes Tamei. There's no specific Ister to blood. And Me'ila, Me'ila Kamosa. Comets and Evarim are subject to Me'ila. Blood is not subject to Me'ila. Now, why is blood not subject to Me'ila and Nosar and Tumah? And Rashi in the bottom of the Amud says, when we get to Yuma, or I guess depending on which side you want to look at, when we get to Yuma, when we're going to do Yuma, so we'll see, it's basically, it's a drasha. The Torah tells us that blood is simply not eligible for the Isurim of Tuma, Nosar, and Mi'ila. Anyway, 6 points of connection of Kametz to Evarim. As we turn to now Chafam and Beis, Adaraba. The Gemara says just the opposite. Dam Havala Rebuye. I can compare Kametz to blood on 2 points of connection. Shekain, Matar Kamosa. Blood is a Matar, so is a Kametz. Two, Nifsa B'Shkiyas HaChama Kamosa. So, and it becomes disqualified through Shkiyas HaChama. Just like, blood becomes possible through Shkiyas HaChama. Kometz becomes disqualified through Shkiyas HaChama. What about the Evarim of a Karbonola? You have all night to bring them on the top of the Mizbeach. So we have now two points of connection between Kometz and blood. And so therefore, Hanech Nefishin, the Gemara says, therefore, look at the scoreboard. We have 6 points of connection between Kometz and Evarim, 2 points of connection between Kometz and Dam, so 6-2. So therefore, if something is going to get excluded, so first blood. Not first, but only blood. Okay. Let's take a pause over here in the Gemara. What we have in terms of a daf today is the question of what is essential. So the Gemara challenges the Gemara challenges Rav's premise that when it comes to a mincha, mincha is special and unique in that what asserts something essential by a mincha is repetition. If the Torah repeats instructions by a carbon mincha, so then it's essential, otherwise it's not essential. Melach, what was the problem the Gemara had, is not repeated in the Torah, and yet we know it is essential. And to which the Gemara says a couple of things. One is that it's essential because the Torah uses the word bris, and that's why it's essential. That's actually the second explanation. Or it could very well be that Rav doesn't agree, meaning Rav feels that melech is not essential. How can Rav disagree with the Braisa? The answer is because seemingly our Mishnah also disagrees as well. And our Mishnah says that blood is not, I'm sorry, that salt is not essential. So it could very well be that it's a machlokes hatanaim, whether or not salt is li'ikuva, salt is essential, or a non-essential component of a carbon. Okay, that is the summary of today. In terms of where we ended off today, we went through a braisa on Chaf Amud Aleph that describes what other carbons require salt. The braisa uses the pasuk regarding mincha as a format of klal upradu klal, which means that as long as it shares the same characteristic as the example in the Torah that requires salting is kamitza, anything that shares a common characteristic is also going to require salt. What is the common characteristic? So after a lengthy discussion in the Gemara, to simplify, to summarize, it's that it facilitates wood on the Mizbeach. It's going to be burnt on the Mizbeach. Kometz requires wood, and we saw in the Braisa 12 other items that go onto the Mizbeach and demand wood, i.e. it's going to be burnt on the top of the Mizbeach. Okay. The last point that we just went over, that we just covered in the Gemara, is an idea regarding when things become disqualified. So when it comes to blood, and Kometz for that matter, it gets disqualified b'shkiyas hachama. Right? So that's one of the last points. So for just a couple of minutes, I'm going to stop here in the daf. Tomorrow I'll pick it up from the top of the Amud. But just for a couple of minutes, let's talk about Shkiyas HaChama. It's a topic that comes up numerous times throughout Shas, and it's obviously a really important topic. And every time we see it, and there's a Tosfos over here that discusses it. So we had a Tosfos back in Zvachim that discussed it, and it's in Pesachim and in Shabbos as well, other places. So it makes for a good opportunity to speak about the idea of Shkiyas HaChama. Okay, Shkiyas HaChama. Okay, Shkiyas HaChama represents the end of the day. Now, if you would have asked me, when Shkiyas HaChama? So, there's this big spherical object in the sky. It's yellow. It's really bright. And sometimes it has an orange hue to it. And so, when it drops below the horizon, so I would say now that the sun set. So, if you asked me, I would just simply say it's empirical. Just take a look and see when the sun sets. And that would represent the end of the day. So, Rabbeinu Tam, throughout the Gemara, here as well, in today's daf as well, so Rabbeinu Tam has really a fascinating way to look at Shkiyas HaChama. Rabbeinu Tam says that Shkiyas HaChama is not a moment in time, but rather it's a process, and in fact a really long process. Nearly an hour of Shkiyas HaChama, when the sun drops below the horizon, according to Rabbeinu Tam, that is merely but the beginning of Shkiyas HaChama. Shkiyas HaChama has just begun. That's visible Shkia Sachama. But Shkia Sachama then continues and extends for almost a full hour later. According to Rabbi Natam, so that means to say that the day doesn't end until about an hour after Shkia Sachama. This is Rabbi Natam's view of Shkia Sachama. How did he arrive at this conclusion? So he got here because of a discrepancy between two Gemaras, a Gemara in Pesachim and a Gemara in Shabbos. The Gemara in Pesachim says that Shkia Sachama is 72 minutes after sunset. So that, right, 4 milin. Each mil is 18 minutes. So 18 times 4. So 72 minutes after sunset is Shkia Sachama. That's the Gemara in Pesachim. The Gemara in Shabbos talks about how Shkia Sachama is 3/4 of a mil after, sorry, Bein HaShmashos, sorry, let me say it better. Bein HaShmashos is 3/4 of a mil. Bein HaShmashos is this twilight period where we're not sure if it's day or night. And the twilight period is going to extend for 3/4 of a mil. And so, when Rabbeinu Tam looks at these two Gemaras, how do they coordinate with one another? How do they synchronize? And Rabbeinu Tam says it's very simple. That, I don't want to say really simple, but I'll take that back just a little bit. But he says it works as follows: that really the Shkia Sachama process begins at visible sunset, and then it continues for the next 72 minutes. What about the Gemara in Shabbos that talks about Bein HaShmashos, the twilight period? The twilight period begins about approximately 13 minutes, right? 13 and a half to be a little more exact, but 13 minutes before the end of Shkia Sachama. Right, or 58 minutes after visible sunset. That begins the Bein HaShmashos period. Okay, this is how Rabbi Natam views Shkia Sachama. It's really interesting. From an astronomical point of view, how does he explain it? That's its own separate discussion. But if you take a look at Tosfos over here, so Tosfos over here points out this position of Rabbeinu Tam and how it affects our Gemara. Really interesting. I'll just do this. I'll do this quickly, but it's Yesodah's dick. It's real. It's really fundamental. Breish Misha Hayatame. It's the second Tosfos. Breish Misha Hayatame. The Amrina de Mishkias Achama Tetsu Kocham Dal Milin. It quotes the Gemara in Pesachim. From Shkias Achama until Tseis is 72 minutes. The Rebbe Yehuda. So Hiksha Rabbi Natam de Bisof Ba Mem Malik, and meanwhile the Gemara in Shabbos and Daf Lamed Hey. Mashma de Rabbi Yehuda Mishitishka Achama Ad HaLaila. So the Girsa in our Tosfos is Shnei Chilkei Mil, right? The corrected on the side. Talsa Revei Mil, 3/4 of a mil. Vitirz Rabbi Natam, to that where Rabbi Natam says, read the Gemara, but you got to read each Gemara super carefully. De Mishitishka Achama, Mashma Sof Shkia Sachama. That the language of Misha Tishka Hachama means the end of Shkia Sachama. Shekvar Shaka Hachama, which that means the sun already set. Aval Mi Shkia Sachama, Mashma Mitchilas Shkia. And when you see the words Mi Shkia Sachama, which is the Gemara in Pesachim, that means the beginning of the process of Shkia Sachama, meaning what you and I would describe as visible sunset. From there until Tseis, 72 minutes. Teda, the Gemara says you should know. Sorry, Tosfos says you should know. Midamina gabi ner Chanukah mitzvasa mishitishka achama. Right? When do you light ner Chanukah? So this is not a psak halacha. Everyone understand? We're learning Tosfos. So Tosfos says, well, let's take a look at the Gemara in Shabbos. The Gemara in Shabbos says mishitishka achama. Now again, once we're reading the Gemara carefully, super sensitive to the language, what does that mean? Mishitishka achama. It can't be talking about when the sun visibly sets. What are you going to do? You're going to light your Ner Chanukah at sunset, which parenthetically that's what I do. But okay, neither here nor there. But in other words, but you're lighting Ner Chanukah while still light outside at visible sunset. That's obviously not what the Gemara means. So now, according to Rabbi Natam, Shkia Sachama is not a moment. It's an event. An event that starts at visible sunset, but only ends nearly an hour later. Nearly an hour later, 58 minutes later, you now enter into the twilight period, the Bein HaShmashos, and then 12 minutes later, or 72 minutes from visible sunset, so then you get the Tseis HaKochavim. This is Shitas Rabbeinu Tam that is discussed throughout Tosfos. Here he discussed it, back in Zvachim he discussed it, Obviously in Shabbos and Pesachim, he discussed in both places as well, and I'm sure other places in Chas. And Hachanami, I'm sorry, now, when we're talking about where you can no longer sprinkle blood on the Mizbeach, that's our Gemara, meaning blood becomes disqualified. You know what that means, says Rabbeinu Tam? It means visible sunset, meaning at that point in time, blood cannot be offered. So this is not me breaking any kind of new ground over here. It's pointed out numerous times. For those who subscribe to the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam, right? And therefore, when is the day over? Day's over, not at sunset, but almost an hour later. So even those who hold like Rabbeinu Tam, but Rabbeinu Tam himself clearly is of the opinion that vis-a-vis karbanos, when is your deadline for karban? The beginning of the sunset process, not the end of the sunset process. What does that mean practically? That even if you subscribe to Rabbeinu Tam, you still have to bring the karban, sheft and bring the karban, before the beginning of Shkias HaChama, which means that nowadays we don't have karbanos, but what do we have in lieu of karbanos? We have tefillah. So that would mean that even according to Rabbeinu Tam, so your mincha has to be davened at visible sunset, even according to Rabbeinu Tam. Meaning, for those who don't subscribe to this viewpoint of Rabbeinu Tam and say that visible sunset is actually Shkias HaChama, it's a moment in time, so then there's nothing to talk about. Obviously, you have to daven mincha before visible sunset. But even according to Rabbeinu Tam, sounds like from this Tosfos, also, he would agree with that point as well. Okay.